Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on a Getaway Friday, January 28th, 2022, 13 and a half minutes past the hour. Hope you enjoyed the weather or meteorological data that we provided from 1978 before the break. If you have anything you'd like to say in regard to that, give me a buzz, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Did any of that interest you? Now, as I've said, we do have a game we're going to play here this morning. It's going to be slogans, I guess. Company slogans is what we're going to do, and we're going to give away either $10 to Wendy's or $10 to Sans Sodas. I haven't decided yet. But before we do that, I know everybody likes Marion history who listens to this show, and especially Marion history that's never told. And there's a lot of Marion history that has never been told. We know the big things, you know, pretty much about Harding and about Stingle True and things of that nature, Marilyn Meskey. Well, I'm going to tell you very quickly how this all happened, but the broadcast history of Marion is kind of fascinating. And it all started back in 1940 with WMRN and Bob Mason. Well, from the very beginning, the attorney who handled all of WMRN's business was Howard Guthrie, who was a very well-known attorney here in town. So he had all the files and paperwork and so on and so forth, which can tell you a lot of information. Well, when Howard died, and I believe Lou Kunkel was in the office with him, when Lou retired, they had all these files and all this paperwork that dated back to the 1940s in regard to the start of broadcasting here in Marion and things that went on that were never supposed to be seen. Private contracts and things of that nature. Well, at that time, I think Lou, I'm not sure really who got in touch with Charlie, but he was one of the few left at that time who was associated with the radio station from the beginning, WMRN. So he got all this information, and then when he passed away, his wife Jeannie Evers very nicely gave it to me. And there's just tons and tons and tons of stuff that went on in the early days of broadcasting with these movers and shakers in Marion, Bob Mason and Howard Guthrie and some people in town that date back to the 1940s. And last night I was going through some of these contracts, and I found one of the most interesting things that I don't think was ever known publicly here in Marion. So I'm going to go through this, and people can comment if they'd like. I'm not going to read the whole contract because it's just pages and pages. They were very thorough back in those days. Although there is something interesting in here before I get to this contract that I want to bring up here. This looks like it was a Western Union. You know, it's very, very, very old paper. And basically, here's what it says. Fashion Award, New York. Program Director Madge Cooper of Marion Radio Station, WMRN AM and FM, received her first Fashion Reports Award of New York, Franny. New York Mayor John Lindsay presented the award to her yesterday at a reception and formal dinner in New York. She was one of six honored, but the only one from radio for outstanding coverage of New York fashion. Movie star Joan Crawford was hostess for the reception and dinner, which attracted some 250 fashion correspondents from the U.S., Canada, and Europe. Now, that's the press release. And I have the actual press release right here in my hand. That's not a story from a newspaper. That's the press release that the fashion people sent out. Now, this is what I've always been trying to explain when it comes to Marianne Broadcasting. It was regional local broadcasting. It absolutely was. But Madge Cooper, who lived in Marianne and who worked at the radio station and really was one of the first women in radio, you have to understand what this means. She was one of the first people to receive this award, Fashion Reporters Award of New York, Franny Award. The mayor of New York, John Lindsay, presented it to her. She didn't get it in the mail. It wasn't some fly-by-night operation. The mayor of New York City, the biggest city in the world at that point, presented this to her at a formal dinner, and only six people were honored out of 250 fashion correspondents. 250 who were there doing fashion reports for their stations all throughout the country. No television at that point, but there would have been radio and newspapers. She was one of six. And she was the only one from radio. Now understand that. There were radio stations all around at that point. She was the only one from radio. That would mean all the others would probably have to come from, I would guess, magazines or newspapers at that point. And the hostess for this dinner was Joan Crawford. Do you know how big Joan Crawford, how big a movie star she would have been in the 1940s? So be proud of Marianne and remember these Marianne people. Now attached to this, because they did very good paperwork back in those days, is the actual newspaper article. It's very, very short, so I'll read this. And I think it fills in some other blanks. I imagine they probably interviewed Madge to get some of this information. But the headline is, Marianneite Wins New York City Fashion Award. Madge Cooper of WMRN was presented the first Franny Award by Mayor John V. Lindsay of New York for outstanding coverage of New York City fashion. No, let's say this again. Madge Cooper of WMRN was presented the first Franny Award by Mayor John V. Lindsay of New York for outstanding coverage of New York City as fashion center of the world. The citation represents Fashion Reporters Award New York and is in the form of a gold disc inscribed with the recipient and the mayor's names and the date and name of the award. Film star Joan Crawford acted as hostess. The citation was made at an official reception and formal dinner at the Hotel Pierre Sunday, attended by 250 fashion correspondents from the United States, Canada, and abroad. Six others also won the award. This is the 19th year of Miss Cooper's work in the annual New York City fashion showing and her 26th anniversary at WMRN. Well, now we know the year. It would not have been in the 40s, so she must have been up against television people, because Madge started at WMRN in 1941, so 26 years in, what would that have been? That would have been 51, 61, 66, 67, I guess she would have won this. It was at the Hotel Pierre in New York. Wonder what happened to her award. I'm sure it was over at her house for years here in Marianne, but Madge didn't have any kids, so it's hard to tell where anything ended up. But I thought you might be interested in that, because we talk about Madge a lot on the station. And if you're talking about people who were big deals in the broadcast industry, I think that kind of shows how big a deal she was in her day. Does anybody have any thoughts on that, that a little Marianne, Ohio radio reporter won one of these awards, the first six ever presented, and she was the only one from radio to win the award, and it was from Marianne, Ohio? And Joan Crawford was the hostess at the party. I think that's fascinating. Any thoughts on that out there? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. Does that make you proud of your hometown? I would think it would. Or maybe where you live now. Now, here, that really has nothing to do with behind-the-scenes stuff. But here's the contract that I'm sure has never seen the light of day since it was drawn up. I'll get to this in just a second. This is the hidden stuff. Go ahead, caller.
Morning, Bob.
Morning. How you doing, Bob?
Talking about 10 long a little bit ago.
Right.
Staying over. I look out for sticker shock because it depends on what part of the country you live in. The prices will vary. And I don't know if they're doing any good here in Marion or not, but their prices are outrageous on most of their items.
Well, I guess we're going to have to find out.
Right, as I lived in Florida, Indiana, prices were 7-Eleven to that, and they were expensive.
All right, well, hey, thanks, Bob.
Yep.
All right, well, Bob, a little worried about the sticker shock of the 7-Elevens, and we learned in hour number one that 7-Eleven has pretty much bought out, merged, however you want to say it, with Speedway, so chances are pretty soon we're going to see some 7-Eleven signage at the Speedways here in Marion. Again, phone lines open, 740-383-9944, if there's anything you'd like to say. Now, this is the contract, and contracts were never meant to be printed. And I'm going to get back to this because I like hearing what people have to say. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, you were talking about Madge. Has anybody else from radio ever won one of those, or is she the only one?
You know, that's a very good question. I don't, the significance, I'll tell you what the significance was. I don't know if anybody since has ever won one, but this was the first year that they ever presented those. So the first six people were the first. They had never had a Franny Award before, which was Fashion Reporters of New York. So the first year they did it, one of the people they chose out of the six was a Marion, Ohio radio woman, and she was the only one of that first class of people, six, that worked in radio. All the others must have been newspaper, magazines, and television.
Yeah.
And she was competing with national people. You know, Joan Crawford being the hostess in 1967, and John Lindsay presenting the award, you know, that's, and they didn't present it in Marion, it was at the Pierre Hotel in New York.
Yeah, I remember hearing the interview. Isn't that the one where she had to go down in the basement for DC Current?
Yeah, those are the reports that led to that. But, you know, and I'm sorry because of Madge's age. I mean, she did live to be 99.
Yeah.
She didn't die till 2009, but that people don't really understand. Sometimes I talk about her, and I think they just place her as another radio person. I don't think people quite understand how big a deal she was.
Yeah, they somehow don't comprehend all the stuff that she did.
No, and that's why I would get into discussions with Glenn Coble when he goes, well, this radio person's an icon. We have great radio people here in Marion who did great radio work in Marion. Madge Cooper was something different.
Yes, he was. I've heard that interview. What was it? The Life of Madge Cooper.
Yeah, and you know, she.
I've heard that. Yeah, that's nice.
Well, and the fact that she was doing this as a woman in that era.
That was tough.
Oh, it was very tough. Very, very tough.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, one day, and God bless Jeannie Evers for giving me this stuff, because these contracts and these press releases, like I say, it's funny because when I pick up that, I'm assuming this was either a press release or a Western Union, but I mean, it is the actual press release or Western Union, you know, it's printed on you can tell it came off a teletype.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I wish more people understood what a big deal she was and how she really did put Marion on the map radio-wise in those early days.
Oh, yeah. yeah, Marion might not have been as big as it was as far as radio was back then. I mean, WMRN was the only radio station, probably the only radio station in the surrounding county.
Oh, yeah, and I think at that time there were other people who worked there who were good local personalities who certainly helped out the station, but the things that Madge did gave WMRN a real cachet as being a station that was not just local. They did local stuff, but that they also could compete on a national level.
Yeah, it's nice when radio stations can do that.
Well, that's...
just staying local.
Yeah, I mean, of course you want to do local stuff, and you want to chat with local people, and you want to cover the local beat, but if you can cover a... you know, fashion is interesting for people here in Marion, and that's essentially what she was doing, but she was so proficient at it that, you know, she was up there with the big people. Can you imagine that in 1967, that the only radio reporter that got one of these awards was a radio reporter from Marion, Ohio? How big a deal that was in 1967?
For it being a woman, that would have been a huge deal.
It really was. And I wish when I knew Madge, when she used to live over here on Delaware Avenue, I wish that I would have discussed with her what happened, because I'm sure she had that award. She got a lot of awards in her life, especially later in life, Hall of Fame and so on and so forth. I really don't know what happened to any of them, because I know that when she died, she didn't have any kids.
And did she have any siblings?
What's that?
Did she have any siblings?
She, they had all died. When you lived in 99,
she had descendants, though. I mean, some of her descendants might have ended up with that stuff.
Well, I was close with Madge at the end, and her, I guess I would say it was probably her power of attorney, was one of her nephews. Of course, when you're 99, your nephews are in their 70s.
Yeah.
So one of her nephews was her power of attorney, and he lived in Cincinnati somewhere. None of her relatives lived around here. She only had one brother, and he'd passed away years before, and, all of her, I don't know, she had a couple nephews. I think it was just two nephews, to be honest. I think they married some people, but I think it was just two nephews. But
yeah.
One nephew lived in Cincinnati, and one nephew, I think, lived over in Galleon. But she was closer with the one in Cincinnati. He became the power of attorney, and he was the one who essentially went over and divided up things in the house. And you know, I don't know if it went to Cincinnati. I don't know where it went, but... a lot of that stuff, pictures and awards and things she had in her house, it's unfortunate because I don't know where they ended up.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out. Maybe they could, if they're just sitting around in a box in an attic or something, maybe they could just, you know, donate them to our historical society. That'd be nice.
Well, I think maybe more than anything else, that Franny Award would be a big one.
Oh, yeah, that'd be...
because that's very significant to Marion. But, yeah, just another wrinkle in Marion history. But wait till you hear this contract, because this has never, I'm sure this has never been read on the air. And it tells some wranglings that went on back in the 1940s.
Hmm. All right, well, I'll get off here so you can read it.
All right, hey, thanks for calling. And again, if anybody has anything to say, please feel free to call in 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. I would love to hear from you. Now, this is the contract itself. This is not a copy of the contract. This is the contract. And I am going to read this momentarily here. Go ahead, caller.
You know, Scott, it'd be nice if the schools would teach a little bit of Marion history.
Well, you know, I think they do Harding, and I think they do some with Marilyn Meskey, and as they should, I think they do some with Mary Ellen Withrow. But outside of the political history and the...
when I was going through school, I never remember anything to deal with Marion.
They didn't talk a lot about Harding there?
No.
I think now they talk a little bit more about Harding. I think they, like I said, Marilyn Meskey, I think, gets a mention. But
it helped make people more proud of their community. You know, maybe less apt to throw trash out the window or, you know, whatever.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. We're proud to be from Marion, but I really don't think people understand, aside from a president came here, which obviously was the big story, these other people who were coming through here who were doing quite amazing things. Like the other day I heard somebody call in and say, well, Huey Lewis was here for a while, and he was, but it was just when he was a kid, and he didn't do anything here that was of note. There were a lot of people, like President Harding, like Florence Harding, like Mary Ellen Withrow, like Madge Cooper, like Charlie Evers, and there were others I'm leaving off the list, I'm sure, but they did their things from here. Their careers started here, or they stayed here their entire career, and those people don't even get the mentions that a Huey Lewis would get.
Right. And I think they benefited Marion.
Yeah, they did, and they gave back. They all did.
Yeah.
And I think that's unfortunate sometimes that we're more interested in stuff like that. I mean, it's fine that Huey Lewis lived here, but
we're more interested in our stars and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, we make a big deal about these sports people and these, you know, actors and stuff, but, you know, you see a lot of, you know, stuff that's not up to stuff with them. You know, we act like they're gods.
Well, and I don't even have a problem with admiring these stars. I think the problem, though, is that they achieve their success by leaving Marion and going someplace else and succeeding there.
Yeah, that's true.
There are a group of people who started here, lived here, came back here. You know, it's very interesting to me. We talk about the politicians. Florence Harding, when she left the White House, came back to Marion to live. When Mary Ellen Withrow left her position, she came back to Marion. She still lives here. Those people kind of get overlooked.
And they probably know of several other places that they could, you know, they've been around.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and there are several other places they could possibly live, you know, but they came back to, you know, hometown.
They came back to the hometown, and they continued to do things. And to my knowledge, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, once Madge and Charlie came to Marion, I don't think they ever left. But they were doing things here that were of note.
Yep.
So, I agree with you.
And Charlie was just down the road beside us, you know.
Right. And Madge was not born. I mean, I think Madge was born in Illinois, but her family moved here fairly early in her life.
Okay, well, we'll listen to that contract.
Listen to this contract. This contract's interesting.
Okay,
bye-bye. All right, so here's the story on this contract. And I have the date of it right here. And in this contract, you know, back in the old days, they wrote on typing paper. And this is all typed up on typing paper, so it's very fragile. It's about, how many pages is this thing? It's about 4 or 5 pages long. I'm not going to read the whole contract because it's very extensive. But it tells a piece of Marion history that I don't think we really know about. And again, this is April 14th, 1942. So the radio station would have been on the air not even 2 years yet, just a year and a half or so. This all went down. Now, the names you will want to pay attention for here. Well, I'll just start on the top here. This was an agreement between Robert T. Mason, Florence Guthrie, and Howard Guthrie. So now, here's who these people were. Robert T. Mason was the founder of broadcasting in Marion. He was WMRN. Florence Guthrie was Howard Guthrie's wife. And Howard Guthrie was an attorney here in town who, from the start of WMRN, kind of handled all their legal work. I think he was also the secretary of the board of directors. I think he kept meeting minutes and things like that. But here is this contract that came about April 14th, 1942. And I'm just checking here to see if the signatures are on this. I believe they are. And there's even some handwritten notes that are in this contract, which is kind of funny. Whole bunch of stuff here. If I started to read this stuff, we'd be here forever. Read everything. But here's the contract, okay? 1942. Whereas Florence Guthrie and Howard F. Guthrie have made an offer to Frank E. Mason. Now, I got to tell you who Frank Mason is quick to. Bob Mason was the founder of Radio in Marion. Frank Mason was his brother. Frank Mason lived in New York and was the vice president of NBC Radio at the time. Now, Frank Mason was the reason that Bob Mason made WMRN an NBC station, because his brother was the vice president of NBC Radio Network back in 1942. So that's who Frank Mason is. I think he's the only other person mentioned in this contract. And in the beginning of the radio station, Frank Mason put a lot of money into it. So you had Bob Mason, who in the beginning I really don't think was the controlling shareholder. He's the one who ran it locally here, but I think Frank Mason had more shares, even though he only came here once every month or 2 months or something like that. But here's the contract, and that's a name you need to know, Frank Mason, the brother. Whereas Florence Guthrie and Howard F. Guthrie have made an offer to Frank E. Mason and Ellen Mason for the purchase of 130 shares of the common capital stock of the Marion Broadcasting Company, which offer has been accepted, subject to the approval of the Federal Communications Commission of the United States of America. And whereas said 130 shares of common capital stock constitutes control of the said Marion Broadcasting Company. Now therefore, in event said sale is approved and said transaction and transfer is consummated, and in consideration of the mutual promises hereinafter contained, it is agreed by and between said Robert T. Mason, hereinafter called Mason, and the said Howard Guthrie and Florence Guthrie. Now, basically what that says, that's lawyer jargon, for Frank Mason owned 130 shares of WMRN, which was known as the Marion Broadcasting Company. And that was the majority of the shares. That was more shares than Bob Mason had. That was controlling interest. So whoever was going to buy these 130 shares from Frank Mason was going to get control of WMRN. And basically, Frank Mason was sticking it to his brother here. He was saying, I'm out of this business, which started in 1940. My shares are for sale, and whoever buys them is going to be the person running WMRN. And, of course, Bob Mason did not want that to happen, because he was the one working here and making it a success. Howard Guthrie was his attorney, Bob Mason's attorney, and Howard came in and bought the shares. Now, what I'm about to read next, this is the deal that, and I think this is between Bob and Howard, that if Howard got these shares from Frank Mason, this is what would happen. Number one, Bob Mason will remain in the employ of the said Marion Broadcasting Company as president and general manager for a period of not less than 5 years, as such salary as the board of directors shall determine. But in the event it is necessary to reduce the salary to the amount of less than $45 a week, that's what people were making, the said Mason shall have the privilege of being released from his agreement to remain with the company upon giving the Guthries 90 days' notice in writing. Number two, The said Guthries agree to vote their shares in favor of the employment of Mason as the president and general manager of the company as set forth in Section 1. Number 3. Mason shall have an option on all or any part of said shares for a period of 5 years, from the date of the consummation of the said transaction at a price of $125 per share up until May 31st, 1943, and thereafter said purchase price shall increase $1 a share on the first day of each month thereafter, beginning with June 1st, 1943. But if at any time Mason exercises said option, so that upon the consummation of the transaction, he will hold 50% of the voting stock of said company, and said Mason will at such time exercise the option for all of the stock remaining in the hands of the Guthries. And unless he so exercises the option for all of the said stock, said option shall not be binding for more than enough of said shares to give Mason 49% of said voting power. Number 4. The Guthries will not sell said shares or any part in said company except subject to said option. Mason will not sell his shares or any part thereof in said company without first offering the same to the Guthries. Number 6. But in the event a sale of all the shares of the company or all the assets of the company is arranged, approved by the stockholders and the Federal Communications Commission, then none of the options herein given shall be exercised. Number 7. This contract shall ensure to the benefit and be binding upon the heirs, executors, administrators, and assignees of the parties hereunto in case of death. Now, that essentially, I think, wait, there's one more page here. Let me see if I can get this page up here. In witness hereof, the said parties have hereunto set their hands to 6 copies hereof the 17th day of April 1942. Okay, so basically, what happened here was Howard Guthrie saved broadcasting in Marion and actually owned controlling interest in it for a period of time. I don't think many people know that. So basically, what happened here was Bob and Frank Mason started the radio station. Frank Mason owned control of the radio station. He owned the 130 shares, which was controlling interest. Bob Mason, by 1942, did not have the money to buy these, even though he was running the station here. His attorney, friend, and secretary, Howard Guthrie, came in and bought the shares from Frank Mason, but in this contract said they will keep Bob Mason on as manager for 5 years. That was the agreement, that the board of directors would choose his salary, that the Guthries would always vote their shares for the employment of Bob Mason, and that for 5 years, Bob Mason would have the option to buy the stock from the Guthries, which would give him controlling interest. Now, what's funny is, what would have happened? Now, I think in here, there's something on the back. I think this is actually the stock. Capital stock. I believe this is actually the stock papers. Boy, isn't that interesting. Boy, there's a lot of stuff in here. Anyway. Boy, there's something in here from another law firm from 1940. Application to the Fairfield Broadcasting Corporation to erect a local radio station. All kinds of stuff here. Anyway, the point is of this is that how the story goes after Howard Guthrie saved the radio station is that Bob Mason did come up with the money in 5 years. So, how interesting is that? That within 5 years, Bob did come up with the money, and he did buy the stock back from the Guthries, Howard. And I know that form is in here because I saw that last night, trying to skim through all these papers and see if that contract is in here. I know that contract is in here as well because I saw it last night. The contract for Bob to buy the stock from Howard Guthrie. But let me see here if I can find it real quick. Well, I don't see it in here, but I do have that contract as well where Bob ended up buying the stock from Howard in that five-year period. And everything turned out well for broadcasting in Marion. But that's the story that I don't think many people do realize is that Howard Guthrie, God bless him, saved broadcasting in Marion. Any thoughts on that? 740-383-9944. Because the thought was that if Frank Mason had sold those shares to anybody else, what would have happened? Would they have fired Bob Mason? They would have had the ability to. They would have had the power to do so. $125 a share was what WMRN was going for in 1942. So I guess we can thank Howard Guthrie and his wife for coming in for the save. All right. Anybody have anything to say? That contract is so interesting. It's the paper is so fine on that. It's fascinating. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Scott, I got a call on the telephone from the electric company. Monday, between the hours of 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. in the Oakland Heights area, of especially Congress and Henry Street, they're going to be replacing a transformer, and our power is going to be out for a couple hours.
On Monday, this coming Monday?
Yeah, on this coming Monday.
So what are the hours, again, it could be out?
Between 7 a.m. and 4 p.m., which is the beginning of their day and probably their ending day. Tried to get it pinned down in the 2 hours that we're going to be out, but...
Well, I guess it's good they're replacing the transformer, but tough that people will be out of power for a while.
Yeah, but it's good that they let us know. That way everybody don't have to try to call and tell them what's the reason why they did it. They don't want the phone calls.
But yeah, everybody can prepare for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So did you hear any of that contract?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Isn't it interesting? I don't think many people consider Howard Guthrie to have been a part of the radio station, but he came in for the save.
$45 a week.
Well, that was the bottom. That if it went below $45, Bob could leave. Because essentially the deal was it was protecting Bob to stay in the employ that Howard Guthrie could not fire him. But they also gave Bob an out that if for some reason the business started to fail, that if his salary would have dropped below $45 a week, he could have left on his own.
I wonder what a guy would make, like Marion Power Shovel, working a 40-hour-a-week job.
Well, back in 1942, I don't know if anybody has one of those calculators on the phone. I don't know what $45 in 1942 would translate into 2022 dollars.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure it's quite a bit more.
You know, $45 an hour wasn't like minimum wage today, you know.
Well, this was $45 a week.
Oh, yeah, $45 a week.
$45 a week.
Now, there's people, better watch my language, there's people that make that, you know, by the hour.
Yeah. Well, but you know, back then, I'm trying to think, in 1942, you know, bread was probably a nickel. So, I don't know. I'm guessing $45 was probably a pretty good salary a week back in 1942.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah. It's an interesting story, but hey, I thank you for calling in about the electric company.
Yeah, I just want to let everybody know.
Yep, appreciate it. Thank you. All right, 52 minutes past the hour. Anybody have anything to say? 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. I think that contract's fascinating, and I have trunks and boxes full of these contracts and pictures and just little notes that were sent to people and things that went on during that era. Books, what was spent on what and how much money was coming in and who was paid what. It really was a very well... I think Howard Guthrie must have been a very good lawyer because he documented things very, very well. And there were very precise contracts in regard to things. But does anybody have any thoughts? 740-383-9944. Do want to mention again, if you're out in the Grandview area, you had a water outage yesterday. And... they did fix it last night around 8:30, 9 o'clock p.m., but you do want to boil your water for 24 hours for 1 minute if you're going to cook or brush your teeth or make ice or anything of that nature. So it gives the water company time to make sure the water is safe. And the Richland Road Church of Christ at 535 Richland Road is having their food giveaway tomorrow, Saturday the 29th. Parking lot opens at 8 a.m., giveaway at 9 a.m., and the church gives away a couple hundred full grocery carts of food. Go ahead, caller.
That was very interesting.
Isn't that interesting? And I think all of that was done... I don't think anybody knew about that. I think they knew that Frank Mason left the picture, but I think they thought that Bob Mason just assumed control because they were brothers and everything was hunky-dory. I don't think anybody knew that Howard Guthrie actually owned the station and came in for the save.
Yeah, so they kept it quiet. They didn't publicize that they had basically controlling interest in the radio station.
No, you will never find, and a lot of times they did print things when contracts were done. You'll never find anything talking about that particular contract, because I think it was kind of an embarrassment to Bob Mason that his brother would do that, put those shares up on the market. I think that it also probably was uncomfortable for Bob Mason to have 5 years to buy these shares from Howard, because if he didn't come up with the money, if the station didn't become a success, what would have happened?
Yeah, he had to do some serious scrimping and savings, $45 a week.
Well, and it tells you, you know, everybody thinks, it's a funny thing, you know, when we started this station, we've only been on the air 7.5 years. Everybody thinks radio stations start out and they're printing money. Well... you know, even at WMRN, the president just about went down the drain at the hands of his own brother, and had he not known a very kind attorney in this area who saved his bacon, not only saved his bacon by buying the shares, but also gave him a 5-year option to take control. If Howard had wanted the station and wanted to sell it, he didn't have to put that in. And also... guaranteeing Bob a job for 5 years.
Yeah, that's... well, I bet that caused a rift in the Mason family.
Oh, it did. The only Mason family member who I ended up talking to, because Bob and his wife and Bob Mason Jr. were all dead by the time I came around here to Marion Broadcasting, was his daughter, Virginia Mason. And she talked very unfavorably about her uncle. Her uncle apparently had many fortunes in life and lost many fortunes. And there was even a story, and I don't remember it exactly, but apparently he was backing out of the garage one day and backed over one of his wives.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if he killed her. I don't know what the story on that was, but yeah, Bob and Frank did. And I think that's probably where the rift came, to be honest. Was that event. And I think Bob... I think what actually precipitated it, and somebody would have to check my facts on this, but I think Frank got fired from his job at NBC and was looking for some money. And that's why he put those shares up for sale. You know, $125 a share in 1942, I wonder what the calculation is to how much money that is in today's dollars.
I don't know. You'd have to get on the internet. I looked at my calculator on my phone, and I don't have that currency converter.
But, you know, those are things in Marian history that we don't know. And I think people do credit Bob Mason, and I do think rightly so, that he was the founder of broadcasting because he did run it. He made sure, you know, that it did what it did, and he did assume control at one point. But in the beginning, if Frank Mason wasn't there with some money, and certainly Howard Guthrie saving it, you know, he wasn't really the he was the third owner. Or at least controlling interest.
Now the question is, how did Charlie end up with all this?
Well, it's my understanding, I did talk to Charlie about that, all this stuff was kept in Howard Guthrie's office for years. And when they closed Howard Guthrie's office after Howard had died and some other attorneys worked in there afterwards, they found all this stuff that had been in file cabinets, I'm sure, for years. And they said, well, what are we going to do with this? And I think they, at that time, Charlie was a big deal at the radio station. And they thought, well, I wonder if he would want it. And I think that's what happened.
Well, that was luck.
Yeah, just lucky, because they could have just thrown it in the garbage can.
Yeah, they could have just looked at it and said, oh, this is really old. We don't need this no more.
But I tell you, to try to explain how much stuff there is, I mean, there are contracts about the land purchases, and that's kind of an interesting story maybe I'll go into one day, because they didn't just look at the land out here on Mount Vernon Avenue, which, by the way, I don't know if people know, was bought from Henry True. But,
so that land where the radio station is.
Where the radio station is out there right now, that land was bought by Henry True. And I actually have the amount it was bought for, because I have the contract for the purchase. But they did look at other spots, and those contracts are in here as well. I don't want to speak out of turn now, because I was just leafing through them last night. But there were other spots that they considered. It's just people either were asking too much or... there was a difficulty. I mean, there were a lot of things went on before the radio station actually came to fruition.
Wow. I love looking through old papers like that. I bet you're just been having a field day looking through all that stuff.
Well, I'll tell you one of the most interesting things. I do think the contracts are the most interesting, but some of the most fascinating stuff are the books. I mean, I've got the leather-bound books from the early years, and how much money came in, where the money was going, how much people were paid. That's fascinating stuff.
Wow, that's just incredible that you have all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to make sure it goes to the Historical Society if I ever keel over.
Well, yeah, well, you're not going to keel over anytime soon.
No, not anytime soon. I'll keep it in my possession for a while, but I do hope that that one day it gets up there, because I would like to see it. This stuff is so old and on such thin paper. I hope somebody can transcribe it into a database someday.
Oh, I'm sure they could.
Yeah, that would be nice that people could, because the wording is what's so interesting. I mean, that contract that I read, the provisions in there are fascinating, that they had to keep Bob Mason on, they had to pay him a certain salary, he had the option for 5 years to buy the stock back, which again he did. That stuff's interesting to me, and I don't think has ever been known. I think this morning is probably the first time that's ever been heard. I'm sure on Marian Radio.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I understood it.
Yeah, you know what? They 1942. The language. I mean, it was a little bit legal, but pretty easy to understand.
Yeah. Go to read stuff like that now, and your brain just goes to
milk. That's right. Like reading Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, hey, thanks for calling.
Yep.
Again, phone lines are open. I find that stuff fascinating. Number one, I'm fascinated with the broadcast history of Marian because it is so rich. But I also think the things that people went through, you know, it repeats itself throughout time. Nothing's ever easy. Don't ever think any business is easy. It's not. You don't just set up a business and all of a sudden you're a success. And you look at these people who did become huge successes, and you realize the stuff and the drama that they went through to become a success. I guess the rule is, it ain't easy. Don't think it's easy. 740-383-9944. All right, coming back in 15 minutes, and we're going to start our game this morning. Don't go anywhere.
And clicking like for exclusive content. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by C.